Kia ora, this program is brought to you by Wellington Access Radio. Wellington Access Radio, make your voice heard.
Irish on Wellington Access Radio. I'm Andy Linton. I'll be playing you some music and talking about some items with mostly northern flavour that I've picked up since the last time we were together. As always, thanks to our sponsors and our wonderful technical staff who make this all happen for us. Our programme's also available as a podcast on https://podcast.capitalirish.nz. I think if you just look up Capital Irish and podcast on Google, you'll probably find it. So first of all, nod to Adam Costa, who is a man from Island Bay originally, but lives in Armagh City, where he works as a traditional musician in more normal times. So I think with the imminent advent of COVID throughout the community here, he probably thinks that it's about as normal as it is back in Ireland. So he's decided he's going back. Some of you might have had the chance to hear Adam in action on the fiddle when he was back in Wellington, I suppose as a sort of COVID refugee over the last wee while. And he's a very fine fiddle player, and I'll have a little bit of music for him in a second. And also a nod to Fidelma Harkin, who I interviewed on the programme earlier in the year. She's now back home since a few months ago. And I think both of them were waiting really until they could get their COVID vaccines here before they set off back into the fray in Ireland. So our first bit of music is Adam playing a hornpipe called Chief O'Neill's Hornpipe. This was one of the recordings he made for the Kulinas Music School in June in Nelson earlier in the year. And the Chief O'Neill he refers to is the Chief of Police in Chicago, who was a big supporter of Irish music 100 years ago. So here we go. So the next thing I wanted to chat about was recently saw an announcement of a trade deal between New Zealand and the UK. I think people here were quite excited about the idea of that. And I suspect people in Britain have no idea. But I note that the Democratic Unionist Party, who in Northern Ireland, who are the sort of at the right end of the loyalist spectrum, weren't happy about it because they saw it being something that would be hard on farmers in Northern Ireland. They make a habit of being against various bits and pieces of trade agreements and protocols that the UK government have worked out for them. And the main one, of course, that they're not very happy about is the Northern Ireland Protocol, which puts some restrictions on trade moving between east-west, between the mainland of Britain and the north of Ireland, so that we don't have to have a border on the island of Ireland. And of course, none of these things are easy, but they're definitely against that. And it's looking kind of like the UK government are willing to invoke a thing called Article 16, which would actually put in jeopardy the whole deal that was done between Britain and the EU. And there's talk about early December as being some sort of turning point and so on. It would all be very difficult, of course, because it would make things very difficult, not only for Northern Ireland, if there was a breakdown of the trade agreement but for the rest of Ireland. So the whole island would certainly be in the middle of all this hoopla that's going on between the UK government and the EU. I sort of sometimes wonder if the Tories in Britain really just want to find a way to say to the EU, look, here's Northern Ireland, why don't you sort it out because we can't? And I just wonder if that's part of their agenda. I'm sure lots of people in England would be happy to see the back of it. And that doesn't solve the problems between the two communities in Northern Ireland, and it doesn't solve the problems about how we might reintegrate the two parts of the country. But it's an interesting time we live in for all sorts of reasons. I've got a track here by three guys who live in Australia. It's a track called The Sheep in the Boat, and I'm sort of drawing a long bow there and talking about exports of things from New Zealand and so on. And I know the sheep won't actually go in the boat, but there might be a lamb going off to Britain and so on, and upsetting the farmers in Northern Ireland. So here's The Sheep in the Boat from Dougal Adams, Ado Barker and Ben Stevenson, I hope you enjoy it. There's been a lot of talk about the decade of centenaries around Ireland and so on, in the Irish news and the news recently about different Irish centenaries. So we've got, you know, the War of Independence, the Civil War, the Partition. But I'd like to talk a little bit now about a sort of personal centenary. Next week, you'll be listening to this on Sunday, and the Sunday after the 21st would have been... It's 100 years since my father was born, so it's certainly an event that was important for me because I wouldn't be here otherwise, I suppose. He was born near Clochmills in County Antrim, and his father had been a soldier in World War One and had been gassed, and he died as a result of that before my dad was a year old. So my dad never actually knew his father at all. My granny had to go to... Belfast from Clochmills and look for work because there was no social security or anything like that in those days. And if you didn't work, you didn't make any money. And my dad was brought up by his aunt, I find that sort of reminiscent. That sort of goes on quite a lot in New Zealand, especially in Maori society. So it wasn't that unusual in Ireland, I think, probably back 100 years ago as well. Now, he never talked about it much, but I'm pretty sure that my Aunt Sadie was definitely more important to him than his mum in a way, because I remember I was old enough to be at both their funerals, and I remember my dad was probably more upset when his aunt died because she was more like his mother to him. So sort of sad, but nice as well. And of course, I knew both of them. My granny remarried and had another family, and I suppose that sort of didn't help, and so on. Anyway, my dad was a deeply religious Presbyterian, and his musical tastes were strongly biased towards hymns. You know, if there was any music going on at our house, it was my mum playing the piano and my dad singing hymns, or the two of them singing. And in fact, my dad sang in a male voice choir, and they were definitely biased towards singing religious music and so on. Now, when I was a teenager, I sort of pushed back a bit at that, and I discovered Irish music and other folk music and stuff like that. And I was especially interested in songs. And I think the only time I ever heard him sing something that I was singing that he knew, apart from Abide With Me or Guide Me, O Thou Great Jehovah, or the like of that, was this next song here. Now, it's a song called The Flower of Corby's Mill. And we'll have a listen to it, and then we'll talk a little bit more about it. So here we go, The Flower of Corby's Mill.
Come, all you tender-hearted lads, I hope you'll lend an ear, and likewise pay attention to these few lines I've here. It's all in praise of a pretty maid, I mean to use my quill. She's the blooming rose of Antrim and the flower of Corby's Mill. It was on the 1st of January last I was going to Butler's Fair. I spied this pretty fair maid, she was combing down her hair. And as I gazed upon her, my heart with joy did fill. She's the blooming rose of Antrim and the flower of Corby's Mill. It was all for recreation, I went to the fair that day. I didn't intend to tarry long when I crossed McMullen's Brae. But meeting with some comrade lads when I arrived there, oh, kindly they saluted me, you're welcome to the fair. We went into Mrs. Butler's, where there we did sit down. The jugs of punch came tumbling in, the toast went merrily round. The silver it being plenty, we drank with right goodwill, and we raised a glass to the bonny wee lass that works in Corby's Mill. Oh, this fair maid to make mention, I will not name her name. Her parents might get angry, and I myself get blame. She is a mill girl to her trade, and has the best of skill. She's the blooming rose of Antrim, and the flower of Corby's Mill. I have travelled this country o'er and o'er, and parts of Scotland too. I've travelled England far and wide, believe me, friends, it's true. I've travelled Ireland o'er and o'er, crossed many the hollow and hill, but the equal yet I never could get to the flower of Corby's Mill.
There you are, the flower of Corby's Mill. I first discovered that song. There was a guy called Sam Henry who was a newspaper editor in Coleraine. I think it was the Coleraine Examiner or some such thing. And he got people in sort of Antrim and Derry to write in with songs that they knew from their youth or whatever. And this was back in, I suppose, in the 20s and 30s. And that was one of the songs that he collected from that. And I sort of registered the idea of Corby's Mill. Now, Corby's Mill is not that far from Clough Mills and Clough, the two villages where my dad sort of grew up. And it was a flax mill. And the girl that they're talking about there would have been someone who worked in the flax mill. You know, and when I'm talking about flax, I'm talking about flax for linen, not the long spiky plants we get here, slightly different plant, but long fibrous material in it. So I suppose that's why we think of the two in the same, with the same name. And you can just about find a vestige of where the mill was. There's now a trout farm at the same location on the river, and their address is Old Corby Mill in Limavallachan Road in Clough in Antrim. So that was the only thing he ever acknowledged as being a song that he must have known from being a kid or a young man. And it connects me to him in a way that was nice, you know. I like it. When I was a kid, we used to go back to the farm in Antrim, And one of the things I can very clearly remember was going up to the moss with the men to cut turf. And of course, I was too small to do it, or I was too young. And of course, it was kind of dangerous, or you had to be careful, let's put it that way, because that wall of the turf was always a bit fragile and you could fall down and so on. But I do remember it well, and it was a very sort of primal thing. I remember the idea that you were cutting the ground up and putting it into these sods and then stacking it up and letting it dry. And then later you would be in the farmhouse. I mean, not that day, you know, of course, because it would take ages to dry. but the smell of peat, the smell of the turf fire going. And when I was first would go there, they didn't have electricity at the farm. So there would be at night, you would have the hiss of the tilly lamps going and the smell of turf and be very evocative sort of thing. You know, you would sort of... the smell of turf still takes me back to that sort of time when I was young, you know. But I was interested to read that the cutting of turf is something that's going to be a thing of the past, and they have been phasing it out and trying to stop people doing it and trying to, you know, it's destructive of the wetlands. It's a very pollutant. It's not a very efficient fuel, and while it might smell nice, it's not the best thing for the atmosphere, you know, and so on. And the other piece of it, of course, is that, you know, the bog is actually a fantastic store of carbon dioxide. So they reckon that the world's peatlands all over the world store twice as much CO2 as all the world's forests. So we get very exercised and agitated about people cutting down the rainforest, and of course it's important. But that idea that the boglands are really important, and they're only about 3% of the Earth's surface, so it's kind of a small thing, but they're great for cleaning water and they're great for storing CO2. So we need to look after them. And I suppose there's a wee bit of a lesson there for us here in New Zealand and not allow our wetlands to be drained by overzealous farmers, shall we say, you know. So that's very definitely on the way out. I spotted that bizarrely in a German newspaper that I was looking at, and they were talking about end of an era as Ireland says goodbye to peat and to restore its biodiverse bogs. So I'm sticking with a sort of a bog theme here today. And for those of you who may or may not, the word bog in Northern Ireland is also used to refer to the toilet. You know, we're going to the bogs. You know, I don't know whether that was because that's where people went out the back door and whatever, but who knows, you know. So I'm not talking about those bogs. I'm talking about wetlands, right? So I got this story from reading about something going on in Leitrim. And in Leitrim, there's a lot of bogland. A couple of years ago, I was there, and I remember talking to a man, and he said to me, welcome to Leitrim, where they sell land by the gallon. And I thought that was hilarious, because Leitrim is the land of bogs and lakes and whatever, you know. And there's a long-distance footpath that they've been putting in there called the Leitrim Way. And there's a group who've been working on it called Mountain Methil. And Methil, you know, a shared working party, whatever, you know, that sort of notion. They certainly have been working on that. And one of the things they found was they would try and put wood in on their paths and things like that to bolster them up, or even bits of polystyrene. And the polystyrene would float to the surface and the path would disintegrate and the wood would rot out and stuff. And so they picked up this technique that the Romans used to use when they were building roads, because they were very prone to putting a road in a straight line. They would just say, we're going from here to here, and they would go straight line, bogs, hills, the whole lot. And they would put the fleece from sheep into the bog and then put the stones on top of it. And the fleece would sort of act as a flotation thing, and the stones would sit on top of the fleece. They wouldn't go through it. And these guys are there and doing this wonderful thing. And we'll try and put the links up on Facebook and stuff so that you can have a wee look at this. But I talked with my son here and was saying this was a nice idea. And he's got a friend who's a ranger, a duck ranger, works over in behind Wainu Emara, and he was telling, my son was telling him about it, and he said, oh, we could use that here. So it would be kind of a nice little twist if we end up with this Roman road technique resurrected in Leitrim, which then gets used in New Zealand. And of course, we'd have plenty of fleeces because the cost of wool means there's not much value for fleece. But if we could use it to build tracks in the wilderness and stuff, it would be kind of fun. So that was that little bit here on the Mountain Mehill people who are building this. And I've got a tune called The Mehill Reel, and we'll hear that, and then we'll look at where we get to after that. That's a fiddle player called Connie O'Connell, who lives down in Cork. He teaches at the University of Cork in the traditional music program. And Connie would, oh, well, I don't know if he's still teaching, but he certainly was. He'd be well, he might be 80, he's well into his 70s, I know. I met him in Milltown Malbay in 2019. He was lovely. He gave us a bunch of those tunes that we could put on our website for learning tunes here in New Zealand. And I even tried to encourage him to come to Kjolinas to be the teacher, but he thought it was too far for him to come. And I certainly think he'd be very suspicious about or careful about coming a long way away from home now anyway, you know, with COVID and so on. So, yeah, a nice tune. And Connie's written lots and lots of tunes made them all very freely available. It's really nice. So I just meant to mention as well that the people who played the earlier tune, the one about the sheep and the bog, Dougal and Edo and Ben, all were tutors at Kjolinas. And that was, I just meant to mention that one, so I'm just filling it in there with you. Now, the other little bit of news thing about music, in early December, the first weekend of December, a friend of mine, Lorcan Bolster, who is a Limerick man who lives down in Christchurch, is running a small trad festival down in Christchurch called Cushfaraga, and it'll be out at New Brighton at the beach. And we did one last year. And we had a lot of fun, and a lot of people came to play music, and there's a couple of pubs and things. I think if you look for Cushfaraga on Facebook, you'll probably find a reference to it. It's not a big festival with lots of halls and concerts and so on. It'll just be people playing some tunes at the pub, and there'll be a couple of venues I think he's got organised. So I'm booked my tickets this morning. I'm looking forward to going down, and I'm sure plenty of other people will be turning up for that one. So if you're in Christchurch or you think you might want to go to Christchurch that weekend, that's something that you could maybe catch up on. So we're almost up to the end of our time now, and I've got a track here from Altan, who were a great, well, still are, a group from Donegal. And this is off the very first Altan album, which was recorded back in the late 80s. I remember seeing Altan just before I moved to New Zealand in 1989, and they were fabulous and have continued to be so. So there's three tunes on here. Tommy Peebles, a great fiddler from Donegal, a tune called Loch Alton, which is presumably where Alton got their name, and a tune called Danny Mayans. But Danny Mayans is also known as the Moving Bogs. So we'll keep going with our bog theme. And here's our last piece of music for the day. Once again, thanks to our sponsors and to Marion for doing the recording for me. And we'll see you the next time. Thanks very much.
You've been listening to Capital Irish on Wellington Access Radio 106.1 FM thanks to the generosity of our sponsors. We couldn't be here without them. Our sponsors are Wellington Irish Trust, Susie and Peter McGuinness, and the Hutt Valley Irish Society. A very big thank you from all of us on the Capital Irish team.
That programme was brought to you by Wellington Access Radio. Get your voice heard.
Thanks New Zealand On Air for funding accessmedia.nz.